podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time today. Whatever it means for you in your club, we'll talk about that later.
Hello and welcome to episode 76 of the We'll Talk About That Later podcast, football podcast, weekly football podcast to be even more precise. My name is Junior and I'm here with, let's switch it up. I'm going to go with Abdi first. He's looking away, so I just put it on his
Definitely did that on purpose. Yeah. The way he swung his head when he said his name.
No, I was actually putting my phone away. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, man. Thank you. Oh, no one ever asked me. Thank you, Abdi. Moving on to Tanya. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well. My team finally won, so I'm all good.
Nice. Miss Worldwide podcast tour. All that jazz.
Stop it.
We're just another stop on her podcast tour, man.
Although this is her home leg because, you know, anyway. And we've also got Mark.
I'm here.
Nice. How are you?
I'm good, my man. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Oh, everyone's asking me now.
I thought I'd ask you after the praise you gave Abdi.
Yeah, praise I gave Abdi. Cool. Let's get straight into it. Our spotlight game for the week. I said it in a group. I think we are cursed because every spotlight game we choose, the spotlight games we accidentally stumble upon tend to be good games. The spotlight games we sit and choose tend to be boring games. And this week it was Chelsea versus Man United, 0-0. Chelsea are so difficult to watch, but Man United in big games are even harder to watch. They're just so boring. But anyway, there was one big incident in the game. Shall we just start there?
Yeah.
Do you know what? I think start there, but if you guys are anything like me, where I just still have no idea what should and shouldn't be given as a penalty, you're going to ask a question, and I don't have the answer. I'm actually pretty unsure and interested to hear what you guys think, actually.
Okay, so instead of following the rules, let's say what we think should have, like, your gut and instinct by watching that clip of when... Okay, let's talk about the incident because we're just sidestepping the incident. So basically, we're talking about in the first half, there was a Man United free kick and Rashford shot, Mendy parred it away, and it was Cho and Greenwood came together and they both handballed it, basically.
Greenwood didn't, but it looked like Greenwood did.
Yeah,
I thought Greenwood did.
Like never actually touched Greenwood.
Didn't touch it. Yeah.
Anyway,
the Chelsea players were actually the only people appealing it.
Yeah. So Chelsea wanted a foul, but when watching the replay, you could clearly see that Cho's hands high and touches the ball, which then goes on to Greenwood. So the referee and VAR decided that the referee should go to the screen and view it. The referee took 2 seconds and said it was just as he has called it. Now, there was a lot of debate in the Sky Sports studio, but what do you guys think? And on Twitter as well. But let's talk about what we feel first, and then we'll go into what we think the rule is.
Cool.
I hate Man United, yeah? And they get bare penalties, but that was a penalty, man. That was a penalty. If you go by all of the penalties I've been given this season, how little room they give to give any leeway with that rule now, with your hand being out and in an unnatural. Obviously, he didn't mean to touch it, but you know, most of the time players don't mean to touch the ball with their hand. You know, it's just they know handball is a rule of the sport. So, yeah, it should have been a penalty. But I think I know what you're going to say, Mark. That free kick shouldn't have been a free kick because McTominay give a big boot to Mount. How can you give a free kick to Man United?
You know the kids in school, like when there's a supply teacher or something, yeah? and the teacher asks a question and then the people at the back just continue their conversation. I feel like that's Abdi because I started with, let's talk about what we feel. And Abdi starts talking about what the
people are. He doesn't.
Abdi just treats me as a supply teacher. He doesn't care about me.
Abdi, you remind me, because genuinely, I was going to start off and say, first of all, that objectively and as a neutral, that was never, ever a United free kick to begin with. So I guess you could say it's evened itself out in the grand scheme of things. But I mean, I kind of agree with you, Abdi, that it is it is a penalty. If it was against my team, I'd be screaming for a penalty.
Yeah.
But we all would. But I just think if you're giving penalties for that, you're going to see pretty much penalties game on game, as we're kind of seeing. I think it's one in three games this season we're seeing a pen at the moment at that rate.
I think for me it is a pen because his hand is high. It's not in a natural position. If he's going to challenge Greenwood, his hand doesn't need to be there. And he does touch the ball. Whether Greenwood, like the contact with Greenwood kind of moves his hand higher up and then it contacts the ball, I just think his hand doesn't need to be there. If you're going to guard for the ball, I don't know. That's my opinion. Tanya?
No, I agree. But the thing is, I'm just so confused with what is handball and what isn't, like what Mark said at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because we've seen those types of handballs given before, but as always, there's just no consistency. So
it's true.
I'm not surprised it weren't given, to be honest. But I personally thought it was a handball.
Were you surprised how quick the referee took to see it? Like, because he was really quick on the screen when he was sent there. Mm. Do you think he just went like, why are you wasting my time for? I already said it was not handball.
Yeah, or maybe he's just thinking United always get pens, so not today. He went in
the mood. Was this the same ref that looked at the screen for 5 seconds in the derby, the Merseyside derby?
No, I don't think so.
Maybe they've been specifically... again, this is all just...
speculation.
Kind of me, just guesswork, speculation. Maybe they've been said, look, when you go over to the screen, just try and keep time to a minimum so we can get on with the game kind of thing.
Yeah.
I doubt that's been said because at the end of the day, if you want the right decision, just take the time it needs.
Yeah.
I understand it's annoying because it will take sometimes 3 to 4 minutes, but going over for 5-10 seconds and making your mind up on that, to me, is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But in the grand scheme of things, it says it all about the game, really, that we still haven't spoken about the game.
And Luke Shaw trying to elicit some drama by his comments at the end of the game. He was like, no.
He might get fined for that, you know, I heard. He's going to probably get fined.
The FA have come out and said that they're not going to take any action on this occasion. Which was surprising because I've seen players get fines and so what and so forth for a lot less.
I mean, what Luke Shaw said, apart from the accusation of what the referee said to Maguire, was correct, which is like, and even what Lewis Dunk, after the Brighton game, which we'll get to, they're saying the same thing, that there's no understanding of what VAR is there for, and kind of basically what Mark said at the beginning, like, it's unclear on the rules, some refs give it, some refs don't, and then VAR, like, is it there? So, this is my thing. It was like, is VAR there for clear and obvious errors? If so, then a lot of the decisions this weekend with VAR, it don't make sense. So for example, this is just an example, and I know it's not a penalty before anyone jumps in and says it wasn't a penalty though, there was no contact. So the Pepe one in the first half of Leicester versus Arsenal, where he runs into the box and he trips, he gets tripped by Ndidi instead of Tielemans. At first glance, the ref gave it as a penalty because he trips and it looked like Tielemans tripped him. So it's not clear and obvious there. It's like it could have been either or. And when you zoom it in and they show a picture where it's like, I saw the photographer at the Leicester game. There was a touch from Tielemans on Pepe anyway. But it could have been given, it could have not been given, it was given at the time. Is that clear and obvious? Is that a clear and obvious error? Is that what we're saying? That is a clear and obvious error? I'm asking.
I mean, I don't think we should
try and find any logic in these referee decisions. they're just going by vibes. You know, most of the time, a lot of they just go by this clear and obvious as like an excuse for why they make poor decisions. And, you know, a lot of the time it's a political thing as well. You know, referees all work together in the same area. Like they'll go to the same centre to work and everything. And they won't want to keep correcting each other's decisions, you know? So
do we think that someone neutral should be brought in? So someone who understands the rules of football, obviously, but not necessarily been with this group of referees who sits there and kind of, you know, referees the referee.
Because yeah, I think so. VAR
technically does referee the referee, but
No, I think they'll just get someone from their own organization.
That's what I'm saying. But that's what. See, you don't listen because I said.
I know. Yeah, but you, mate. The whole point of having these people at the PGML, MLL, whatever they're called, all these people. the whole point of having VAR is to oversee the referees. Now we're seeing the VAR is just another referee. It's just another incompetent person, and all the people and the referees never get in trouble for the decision. They don't get demoted. They don't get any negative repercussions for poor performances like players do, or you know, managers getting sacked, or any other people within the industry who get as repercussion for the actions. Referee, if you want to get an independent person, they would just fall in line like the same as all of these people are meant to be looking over the decisions as well. It's just the referees are now, it's getting to a point now where we can clearly see that in this country we have the, you know, some of the worst referees in the world.
Okay, new question. There was a video that I saw on Twitter. I don't know if you guys saw it. I reposted it. Basically, it was a referee in Australia and there was like a penalty decision. And you can hear everything the referee says. You can hear everything the assistant referee says. And you can hear him, like, when he goes to the monitor, he goes, okay, there was contact in the first instance, but there wasn't contact in the second one. Okay, I understand. And then he goes over to the players, explains it clearly, why he's given a decision or the goal or whatever. I can't remember exactly what the decision was. But you can hear everything he is saying. Both the players, managers, and fans can hear everything. So my question to you guys is, if we're not going to get that independent kind of separated body from the referees or whatever, should we do it like that? That way, referees are wholly accountable for their decisions and they're given an explanation as to why. Obviously, I'm not saying, guys, do you think the FA are going to do it? Because I don't think they are. But what do you think about that as a rule? Or a law coming in?
Yeah, I think there needs to be something, because I know we'll get onto the West Brom game, but that, for example, I'm sorry, that ref needs to come out and explain himself. They need to be held responsible for some of these stupid decisions that they make. And it just makes me laugh that they want to implement this whole thing now where you've got to clap for the ref. Are you dumb? Like, they're a bunch of dumbos, bro. I ain't clapping for none of them. They don't know what they're doing. So I'm sorry, I think they need to do something, but like you say, Junior, they're not going to do that.
Yeah,
they're right, 100% not going to do it.
Right, bunch of dumbos down.
They don't want to be transparent. They just don't want to be transparent. Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Because
I don't actually think they would trust them in that scenario anyway. Because who's to say that? That added pressure on them, where everyone hears what they say. They might actually make them even worse.
Can you imagine if Mike Dean was mic'd up? Oh my God. Some of the things he'd say, he goes, bruv, do you know who I am? My name is Mike Dean. I'm fabulous.
I'm fabulous.
Do you remember a couple of years ago where Tottenham were playing Liverpool and it was the last minute of the game and they gave a penalty against Van Dijk?
Yeah.
And then you could actually hear the referee talking to the assistant. And then both of them were saying, I don't know. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just go, oh, I think maybe Lovren had a touch. I'm not sure. And then he gave the penalty anyway.
It's true.
That's the kind of decisions you would hear on a microphone.
But okay, exactly. but it would be better to hear that, because then we're not left in like limbo about why was the decision given or not given. Anyway, there was a football game that we were talking about, Man United versus Chelsea. I mean, barely a football game, but yeah. Did you guys think anyone deserved to win? Why are Man United so negative when they go into big games? Chelsea, I feel like Chelsea is like a boa constrictor. They want to like just squeeze teams to death until they can get one or two goals. But it didn't happen on this occasion. What do you guys think?
Yeah, United are really poor against the top sides. Like, they've scored one goal and it was a penalty against us when they were 6-1 down. And you have to say, Ollie's clearly just scarred from that game. How many nil-nils?
So
like,
sure.
5 nil-nils. Like, that is shocking. I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, it's just so negative. But I do feel like there does need to be some onus on Chelsea as well, because let's be real, they've spent so much money, and I'm sorry, Ziyech, yeah, he's a flop. I'm saying it now, yeah, he's an absolute flop. Like, he had such a big chance in that game, and I keep watching him, and I'm just waiting him to do something. I think he had one good game this season, and that's about it. Like, Chelsea, yeah. I don't know, questions have to be asked. If they don't get top four, that's a massive, massive fail, regardless of Tuchel still being new to the job or not. I just think they've got so much quality, but yet they don't even look like scoring. How does that work? I don't get it. I actually don't get it. It baffles me. But yeah, United, boy, lollipop man. That's what I call Ollie. He's a lollipop man. I can't take him serious. Did you not see him clappy when Fred made a little shot? He was like, well done.
It was like a dad on like Sunday League watching his kid, and he was like, oh, that was good.
Absolute joke, man.
It was funny watching Bruno and Zia, both of them just play, you know, the battle of the Hollywood pass. Both of them have absolutely no, especially like with Ziyech being in a possession side, he just absolutely has no care for the ball. He goes, I don't care, I'll be on a football pitch and I'm going to do whatever I want. And Bruno goes, you know, I see what you've done, Ziyech, and I will top it.
I'll raise you.
Yeah, these guys have no respect for possession.
Mark?
No, these guys have just covered it pretty well. I wanted to speak about the United. What do we think in terms of quality that United have up front? Because six games on the trot against fellow Big Six teams and they haven't scored a goal. And as Tanya said, the seventh game down the line there, they lost 6-1 to Spurs, and that's when they did score a goal. So, yes, they are a great team, but is there actually questions to be asked about the composure and the quality of their front line? Or is it just the way that Ole's setting them up to be a bit too safe in those big games? I don't know. That's a question I want to throw out.
I agree with Tanya. Yeah, exactly. I think he's scarred by that Spurs defeat. Since then, not scored a goal, not got a win. Like, seven games a season, five in the big games, five draws and two defeats. And, you know, it's clear that he's proper shook as well, because Man United, almost against any other team, to be honest, they go for it. You know, Bruno goes for it. Like, and Bruno, he's the one, like, I hate to say it because he has been good this season, but maybe a tad overrated, because in the big games, he ain't doing nothing. Like, he's continually been marked out of the games. But I do think generally in the Premier League, there have been loads of poor games, not just Man United games. In the big games, they've all been quite poor affairs where they're quite tight and teams aren't going for it as well. And big games are becoming overly tactical.
But I do agree with you, Abdi. But it's something about United. Like, even at home, they don't go for it. They lost to Spurs and Arsenal, but they just don't go for it. Anyway, we spent a lot of time on them. But that's a big shout to call Bruno overrated. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know me, man. None of this is new to me.
Controversial.
Next game was, or well, the first game of the weekend was Man City versus West Ham. And I thought that was a good game, you know. I thought West Ham gave a good account of themselves. Unfortunately for them, it finished 2-1 to Man City. Again, another game where Man City saved by the defence up front, where Diaz and Stone scored. What'd you guys think of the game?
I mean, just quickly, first of all, credit to West Ham, because, I mean, it's very hard to turn up and try and give City a game, but it looked like they wanted to do that. So yeah, credit to West Ham. But again, it comes back to this overall point of City just being... obviously, it hurts me to say it, just a super, super quality football team. They can win games of football, as they showed on the weekend, in any way at the moment. They don't even need their front line to be firing. They got the centre-backs there to do the job. Firstly, the ball from De Bruyne for Diaz's goal was exceptional. They're happy to have him back, I can imagine. No,
I've never seen Charlie Adam do that ball. I can tell you that.
No. I'm changing Chef it now. Bruno is the Portuguese Charlie Adam.
Oh my god.
Okay. Yeah. Go on, Mark.
All right, hold on. Let me read. Wait.
Abdi, Mark was talking.
No. Go on. Actually, it's a good point, Abdi. The bench. Okay. In where you want to go there.
Hold on, I lost because, keep talking.
All right, well, while Abdi has a look for the bench, yeah, it's crazy. The bench there's quality literally our whole bench, other than maybe Stefan, who is their second choice keeper,
pretty decent.
gets into most teams in the league. That this whole
is
bench.
This is their bench against West Ham: Sterling, Jesus, Stefan, Laporte, Rodri, Bernardo Silva, Mendy, Cancelo, Foden.
That is a disgrace.
You can't compete.
Yeah. The thing with City as well, like, you have to say, like, they had a tough run as well. Like, they had Liverpool, they've had Tottenham, they've had Arsenal. I know you can argue Arsenal and Spurs isn't really a test, but still, it's a big team. West Ham, I felt, was going to be tricky. They've beaten all of those teams.
Easily.
But for me, they're running away with this league, and I don't know. I can't see where they're going to lose games.
That's not in question. Yeah.
I think we need to first give credit to John Stones, because his turnaround is unbelievable. Like, we all thought he was finished, and now look, he looks like one of the strongest defenders in the league. Definitely England's best centre back this season by far.
They don't need a striker now. They've got him. They don't need to get
and
a striker.
And Laporte was top two, top three best centre backs in the league, and Stones has put him on the bench. Like, it's crazy. He's just been, and also now he's popping up with goals as well. So,
and Pep laughing after the game, saying we've got a lot of money, that's why we're doing well, which is just a slap in the face to everyone else.
Ooh, shady.
Yeah. I just want to talk. Can I say one thing about Pep that I have respect for? So,
oh wow, this is new. Everyone, week, sit down.
I know what this is.
Yeah. The other week, I noticed the hoodie he was wearing. You know, he started wearing this hoodie as well. So basically, he's a hoodie wearing called Open Arms, and it says it's a non-profit, non-governmental organization with one principal mission: to protect those who are trying to reach Europe by sea, fleeing from armed conflict, persecution or poverty, and also inform and educate on land so that those migrate can make decisions with complete freedom of knowledge. So big up Pep as well for...
Yeah.
It seems like a changed human being, so that's why I hate
a changed human being. Anyway, let's move on. West Brom versus...
Oh, no, can you just quickly on West Ham, yeah? Right at the end as well, did you see the ball
that Lingard put
in? Lingard, what a ball in the 95th minute, yeah?
Diop.
Right on Diop's head. I thought West Ham would have stolen the points there, but...
It was a really poor header.
They keep going to the end as well.
And they're really organised as well. They're really, really organised.
I just don't get it. The team, for me, it's just, like, it's an all-right team. I just don't know what he's doing. Is he some wizard or something?
I called him a magician last week.
He is. Last year,
yeah. I saw it.
momentum is a big thing in football, though, and they've got that at the moment. There's only, like, you're looking at about a third of the season left. So if you're West Ham's and your Leicester's keep up the form that they're in, and I will get to Leicester, because I'm being dead serious. I have doubts about whether they will.
Yeah.
Potentially similar to last year, where they won two in their last 13. I don't think it will be that.
Yeah.
But we'll chat about that when we get there. But West Ham, I think if they can keep their composure and keep playing how they are, they're definitely looking at some Europa League football next season.
Mark said something about momentum, but it's also the confidence. If you got confidence, like little passes that you would never try, you would just try, and these things start to come off for you. And West Ham are flying high, and you have to say they deserve to be where they are. And it's whether they can keep it up. But anyway, let's move on to another referee game where it's all about the referee, Mr. Lee Mason. And there's a perfect picture of him, like, head in hand, and he doesn't know what he's doing. And the players behind him are confused. What was that free kick situation all about? Does anyone have any answers?
No, I have no words.
It was absolutely outrageous. Like, this guy, I thought he was a terrible referee 10 years ago, and he's still in the Premier League 10 years later. That decision was so crazy. So he looked at Dunk, allowed him to take the free kick quickly, whistled, disallowed the goal, and when they pressured him, he gave the goal, and then VAR told him to reverse it. This guy, like,
no, wait,
what's your backbone?
No. He blew the whistle for Lewis Dunk to take it. Then he blew it because he said, no, not ready yet. And then VAR said, it's not a goal because you blew the whistle. And then he gave it. And
I think he just said
you needed to look at
this.
I think he regretted blowing the whistle quickly. Like, he wanted to let him take the free kick quickly. But then he just, like, by impulse, blew the whistle again. I feel like he regretted that decision, hence why he gave the goal. And then VAR said, no, come back, bro, come back. You can't do that.
VAR had told him, before he gave the goal, VAR said it's not a goal. Like, yeah. They were in his ear saying it's not a goal. And that's why he gave it. And then he went over to the screen. That's what Jeff in Soccer Saturday was going crazy about. They were going nuts. And then Paul Merson goes, I hope Lewis Dunk does it. Brighton fans are hoping that Lewis Dunk does a Thierry Henry and he can score. And then as soon as he finishes that sentence, Lewis Dunk blasts it over. And he's like, yeah, no, sorry. But it's a farce of a decision. And to be fair, Brighton, they had their fair chances to win that game.
They should be relegated to that.
Most games
they've lost this season, yeah. Or drawn.
I read a stat, yeah, that in the last three games, they've had 65 attempts on goal, 20 on target, one goal.
Yeah.
Wow, that is shocking.
If you're talking about profligacy, Brighton there should be a picture of Brighton just right there in the dictionary next to profligate or whatever. But
and they're not good enough defensively to be
missing chances,
scoring one goal in three games. Because you saw that goal that the who was it? Gallagher scored. I can't remember. Someone from West Brom scored from the free kick.
It was Carl Bartley.
Like Carl Bartley. It clearly looked like all of the Brighton players. The sun was in their eyes, and then he just came in and boom, easy header. I hope they stay in the league because they're actually entertaining.
When we did our early predictions, I put Brighton to get relegated. I just think it's wild now that you think about it. Like when you see all the statistics that Brighton produce, but they don't score. But then you think about it, like their striker is Mopay. After that, it gets really thin with like Connolly, Welbeck, who's always injured. And then after that, their midfield is quite weak as well. I know they got Lallana, but Lallana's also had his fitness issues. And Bissouma's really good. But who else is there to bail them out? On a like McAllister never scores. The Scottish Argentinian, he never scores. Trossard just loves to hit the bar or the post.
It would work, yeah.
and Pascal Gross, he doesn't look like the player they had when they first came up. That got them a couple goals here and there. It just
why didn't they go get a striker in January?
I don't know. They didn't really sign anyone, did they?
No, I don't really.
I guess it's this whole. I guess it's the money situation because usually a club in that situation with a you're looking at staying up, but you understand that there might be actually some difficulty in that. You'd go out and try and address the situation.
Or even get a loan player.
A little lone player. Maybe he had the faith because I think Welbeck was injured at the time, just recently back. But again, you can't hinge your faith on a striker who is fit for a third of the season.
It's true.
I was just going to say, so for Brighton, if they do stay up, as you guys have all mentioned, this a striker has to be a priority for them.
Yeah. It's looking bleak though because Fulham genuinely look like they're getting points. We'll get onto their game against Palace in a minute, but Abdi put here relegation picture. And Newcastle as well is looking a bit mad. So
this is more interesting now because before the teams adrift there was a big gap as well. So yeah. It looked like it was a foregone conclusion. So let's hope at least it can condense so it'd be more interesting.
So what do you guys? So I know we haven't talked about Newcastle or Fulham yet, but just quickly, or shall we talk about both teams and then talk about what we think might happen? Should we go that way? Okay, let's do it that way.
Let's do that.
Okay, the next game was Leeds versus Villa. I thought this was going to be an exciting game, but I guess for certain reasons, you can see why Villa were so compact in their game.
Get well soon, babe. Grealish, if you're listening.
I'm sure he's sitting on the edge of his bed with his phone in hand, waiting for a WTATO episode to drop.
I'm sure that's 100%.
Happening. When you said get well soon, babes, I thought Tim Westwood was sick.
Oh my God, you're bringing that guy up again.
We haven't had a Tim Westwood joke in ages.
We haven't. In fact, I forgot about that whole thing. I love that.
You forgot about the whole affair.
No affair.
So Villa win. Martinez keeps his 13th clean sheet of the season.
Mad.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. What do you guys think?
Yeah, well, that is actually majorly impressive, first of all. Well, not just from Martinez, because there's a back four in front of him as well, and it's been a pretty consistent back four in terms of Matty Cash, Mings, Konsa, and Target. So you've got to give credit where it's due to that Villa defence. But as you said, Junior, I thought we'd see goals.
Yeah.
Usually when Leeds play or when Leeds are involved, there's goals for both teams. Usually you can expect a 3-2, 4-3. But yeah, I guess you could say it was a bit of a disappointment because the early goal came. El Ghazi back in the team, back on the score sheet.
Yeah.
And you thought, all right, this game's going to open up now. You've got a 1-0 within 2-3 minutes. What's the rest of this game going to bring? But from that moment on, it was just a bit of a letdown, to be fair.
Yeah. I agree.
Go on, Tanya. I just find Leeds so weird. Like, I honestly think they just get up and they're like, should we win today? And then the next day, they're like, let's lose today. And then the next day, they're like, let's have a draw. Like, they don't, like, they're so unpredictable at the minute.
No, I mean, that, that's, for me, that's one of the, I know this is contradictory because I said about Palace before that you just don't know what Palace is going to turn up. But for me, one of the beauties of Leeds is that you don't know what Leeds is going to turn up, but actually when they do turn up,
it's beautiful.
You know, it's good football. True. There are going to be goals, usually for both sides, and you can expect a really good game. So I like Leeds in that sense, but definitely if they're looking to become a consistent Premier League team, they have to find a balance between those crazy 5-4 games and just seeing out a 1-0 win or getting into half time without conceding a goal and then taking the game from there. They need to find that balance for me, definitely.
I mean, Mark, it's not contradictory because Palace are just boring. It's just like Leeds are exciting and Palace are just boring because whatever game Leeds play, it's just they only play one way. And whether they win, lose or draw, they're going to play exactly that one way. But
say it a lot better. Definitely vibes are female.
All right. Abdi, that was... what did you put here? Bielsa and Smith assessment. Explain yourself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I just want you guys to see. What do you... Because like we all had high hopes for Bielsa coming into the season, right?
Yeah.
You know, obviously he's a coach that a lot of other managers say they've got inspiration from. And he's got come with a big reputation. And then obviously Aston Villa as well. We all put them down as relegation candidates because they scraped relegation. They escaped survival just by the skin of their teeth last season as well. So I was just thinking, what do you guys, what's the assessment? Because they're pretty much close in terms of where they are in the Premier League. Like Aston Villa are only, what, 3 points, 4 points above Leeds? But obviously got games in hand as well. So I just want you to see you guys' opinion of what's your assessment of both of those managers this season? Mm. I know we pretty much talked about Leeds and everything, but we've got to give big credit to Dean Smith.
Yeah, I have to give massive credit to Dean Smith. Well, the one thing I will say is that you look at that Leeds team and 80% of that squad is the same squad that played in the Championship under Bielsa. Mm. So that's where I give Bielsa credit, is that he's brought pretty much the same group of players up a level, arguably the highest level of football you'll find in the world or in Europe. Mm. And he has them winning games of football, some weeks comfortably, some weeks not so much, but he has them winning games of football in the league. And then you've got Dean Smith, who's taken Villa from, as you said, skin of their teeth survival to challenging for Europe, all within the space of a year. So I think in this case, we can just commend both managers for me.
I think Villa also, like the business they did in the transfer window helped as well. I think Ollie Watkins, that's such a good signing. Ross Barkley, I think that's definitely helped them. Yeah, Martinez as well. Yeah, they did some really good business. So yeah, you've got
Konsa from Brentford. I'm not sure when he originally came in, but
he was there last season.
They've obviously got a good, because they had I think it's Courtney House.
Dean Smith was from Brentford as well, isn't it? So there's a good connection from Brentford.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, Tanya took what I was going to say, which was the transfers that Aston Villa have been able to make have taken them to the next level and have allowed them to secure their defence, which was a major problem for them last season. They couldn't keep clean sheets, and now you've got a goalkeeper who's kept 13 clean sheets and You've also kept probably one of the most coveted midfielders in the, I don't know if it's the world, but definitely in the Premier League, in Jack Grealish. And that would have been a big priority for them coming into the season to secure their talisman and take him forward. The only thing I will say is that where last season and Dean Smith guided Aston Villa just by the skin of their teeth, as Abdi described it, to avoid relegation, Leeds look nowhere near relegation. Using Mark's point of majority of the team is the same from the Championship. So, I, you know, it's you might say, oh, you know, Leeds concede too many goals and stuff, but they are far, far away from a relegation scrap. So, you know.
Just one note for Bielsa. Please just buy some fullbacks. He just puts anyone at fullback. left wing, right wing, centre back, anyone, bro. Just buy some fullbacks, please.
5'4" wingers. Yeah, be my left back. let's move on. The next game was a massive game for Newcastle. Desperate at home to Wolves to win. They took the lead via Lascelles, and then Neves scored. But the biggest thing that happened in that game was two major injuries for Newcastle. One was Almiron, and then the other one was Alan Saint-Maximin.
So painful.
And I don't know.
They're both injured for a significant amount of time. They might be done.
The official statement from Newcastle is that they will both miss the whole of March, and then so that's a month, and then you kind of add to that the Callum Wilson injury, which was roughly 6 weeks, and it's been a week or two already. So you're looking at those three back in a month or so, which is not good for Newcastle whatsoever.
No,
with the position that they're in, not getting goals anyway. And you take out Almiron, Saint-Maximin, and Callum Wilson, probably their three biggest goal threats.
I think we should say a prayer, guys, because
I honestly think you should. I'm not even joking, because you look at Fulham and you look at Newcastle and you see 3-point gap, and you think, okay, which team actually looks like they're going to pick up more points between now and the end of the season? And for me, the answer is Fulham.
Yeah.
It's true. You know, Mark took the words right out of my mouth. Like, they weren't scoring goals anyway. And now you've lost your three biggest goal threats. And it's starting to look bleak. I think, what's his face? Steve Bruce needs to revert back to the Rafa Benitez tactics and just try not to concede. Because if you're playing 4-4-2 with, Murphy on the left and Richie on the right, or vice versa.
Oh, they've got some good ballers in that team, man.
So now you have to trust Joelinton and Dwight Gayle to get you.
And the maddest thing is that Joelinton is a £40 million player.
What a waste of money.
So it's like, it goes to show again the value of having an actual, genuine working scouting department rather than who. I understand that he might have looked good and they obviously scouted him for a couple of years.
No, he actually didn't. He scored 7 goals in 3 years at Hoffenheim.
Yeah.
Where was he? Hoffenheim. Yeah. But they obviously they must have saw something in him. But again, it goes back to my point earlier in this episode. I can't remember when. But if you have the team there with the right minds and they use all the data and stuff, and your scouting department essentially is key. And Newcastle, had they spent that £40 million on a different player, who knows where they could have been.
Yeah.
But he's the man. He's the man who's got to lead. He's the man. 7 goal in 3 years, Joelinton is the man who's got to lead them.
But I just want to say, before we talk about Wolves with Abdi, Mark is completely right because their next game, I don't know if they played this midweek, but their game on Sunday is probably their biggest game of the season. They play West Brom. And you have to win that game. 1 point is not enough for either team. And if West Brom beat Newcastle, that drags Newcastle in, but also elevates West Brom to even closer to Fulham and Man there. So
I wouldn't be surprised, because that's Sam Allardyce's old team, isn't it? So
yeah,
he's going to want to get a victory.
Listen, these are the types of game that Sam Allardyce wakes up in the morning for. Big relegation, 6 pointers. They keep him going.
But Fulham's next two games, Liverpool and Man City. So, I mean, it's
you've looking... got us as well.
Yeah. So, oh yeah, they got the Wednesday, I think, tomorrow. Mm. But yeah, I don't know. It's looking good from an outsider's perspective. Like, it looks interesting. Not good for them. But Abdi, Wolves, go.
Well, not Wolves as a whole. Obviously, they're still not scoring enough goals. But boy, Pedro Neto is good, man, isn't he?
Oh, I love that guy, man.
That ball he put in for Neves. First ever headed goal.
I know! What the hell?
And she's getting more goals, mainly from the penalty spot. But Neto, man, someone has to nab him. I would love him to just stay at Wolves because, obviously, I don't see him coming to us and I don't want him to go there to anywhere else. So just stay at Wolves. But I feel like someone will nab him soon.
Yeah, no, he 100%. But what the important factor here for Neto is or should be, is that he's 20 years old. He's got 15, depending on how he looks after himself and injuries are kind to him and his career is kind to him, he's got 15 more years.
Yeah.
And there's no rush for him, in my opinion. I think another 2 years, at least another year at Wolves, honing on that skill set again. What type of player do you want to be? And then make that move at some point. But Wolves is the right place for him, I think, at the moment.
Playing week in, week out. That's what players need to like focus on, is playing week in, week out. What's the point of like, you have a good season and you go sit on someone's bench and then that's it. Your career then goes...
Yeah, but what about the bag though, bro?
it's a valid point. I know you say it as a joke, but the bag is not a joke. So
I'm going to start calling Abdi the bag man. That's all I'm going to call it from now on.
Like, I may be sitting on a bench, but I'm coming into training every day with gold chains and Rolexes and stuff like that.
I don't know. Like,
you could never be a football agent.
Your priorities are all wrong.
But you could collect...
Go and get a bag, bro.
You could
get the bag.
You could collect a bag from Wolves, though, and still play.
Yeah, but the Wolves bag and the Man City bags are different, bro.
I know, 100%.
Man City bag is generational wealth, man.
It's true, but the Bournemouth bag and the Man City bag was, I must have been crazy different for Ake, but my guy's played like two or three times this season.
He must be hating his life.
Is it money?
Must be loving his life. He's going to win the Premier League, bruv. I think he's had 5 appearances by now.
No, I think he's played like twice. I don't even...
Yeah, he's not had both... 5.
It was one at the start before Ruben Dias came in and then probably appearance off the bench.
He needs to start warming up in front of Guardiola. Like, you better put me on, bro. My boy's going to get peak feet.
Oh, my days. Nah, I don't know. Let's move on. This one is going to be brief. Fulham versus Palace.
That happened.
Yeah, cool.
I think actually read out what the summary is because I think it's perfect.
Yeah.
Is that what he said?
Oh, yeah.
Is it? Just...
It was like 0-1 minutes. Yeah. but yeah, Fulham's still picking up points, which is important for them.
They should have won that game, though. They had so many chances. Yeah.
Let's be honest, they will be the more disappointed of the two. They needed the points more. Obviously, Palace were at home, so they would have wanted that win. It's a game they would have expected to win. But as Tanya said, Fulham could have and probably should have won that.
Look, from Fulham to Palace... is 10 points. I know that's a lot, but Palace are relying on their kind of early up and down form where they collected a lot of points. This Palace, they don't look like scoring at all. Do you think the relegation battle extends to 13th where Crystal Palace is?
I think 10 points is a bit too much. Palace, they won their last game against Brighton, didn't it? So Roy Hodgson's going to think we're all right for the next 4 or 5 games. Isn't it?
Yeah, but bro, you say that 10 points is a long gap or whatever. Southampton were top and they are now 14th.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to Southampton. My God.
Damn, I don't know what's happening with them, boy.
That's what I'm saying. It's like they were top, now they're 14th, and they're only 7 points off Fulham. So...
The thing is with Palace, you can't drag them back in because, one, that's a 10-point deficit. So Fulham have to get 10 points back on Palace. And we all know Palace are going to pick up a couple more wins coming in the next 3 games or so.
But could you not say that the same for Fulham or West
Brom?
Yeah,
I mean, but I feel there's too many teams in between Palace and Fulham that are as up and down as Palace. Like, we talked about Southampton's poor form, Newcastle, we don't know how many points they're going to get. Brighton, are they going to score a goal ever again? it's that situation, isn't it?
How many penalties do you need? Like, honestly. Anyway, yeah. Let's move on. Because it seems that we've been abandoned, Abdi. So me and you could just free to talk about Leicester versus Arsenal.
Let's just talk about Leicester Arsenal for the rest of the podcast.
Oh, Tanya's back. Oh no, she froze. So it's just me and you, Abdi.
Yeah. Can I just say, that was probably one of our better performances of the season. Yeah.
Oh no,
I thought the response to going behind was fantastic. We actually didn't I'll just talk about the goal firstly. Their first goal, yeah. Obviously, it's my enemy who scored, Tielemans. I have to give him credit. He did fantastic for that goal. Like, the way he anticipated the ball, went round Xhaka. But, obviously, there's three things before. Obviously, Pablo Mari was probably the most guilty in terms of backing off.
Elneny.
One, Xhaka gave the ball away. Two, David Luiz is covering round for Vardy. So he should be communicating with Pablo Mari, telling him, if he just engages, you don't even need to make a slide tackle or just engage and Tielemans doesn't score a goal like that. Yeah. And Elneny, like you said, goodness me, like, what are you doing, bro? You have to engage. You have to do something. Bust a gut and get there. So that was poor. But after that, almost immediately, the football we were playing, the way we were combining in the final third, it was fantastic. It was a really good response. I looked at the starting lineup before the game.
Oh, my days.
And I low-key lost my mind because, one, the only player I wanted to be rested was Saka because he's not taking the rest at all. Yeah. But if you think about it, Odegaard, we don't have him that long, so play him as much as you can. Aubameyang, he'd just come back from injury. I didn't think he'd be that fatigued. Ceballos hasn't played much. Gabriel was injured for a while. And Smith Rowe, he's been starting, taking off. He didn't start against Man City. He gets taken off. So I was thinking there's no need for that much rotation because... And on top of that, Leicester also played midweek as well.
Yeah.
But I get it. And Arteta 100% got it right. And that shows why he's a manager. And I'm just an idiot on a podcast. So.
Because I was going to say, like, you make valid points. And what I hadn't realised was that we didn't have a game midweek. Because that was my argument. I was like, we've got a game midweek. We need to rest players.
But
when I realised we didn't. Mm. And I was a bit confused. But if you think about it, how congested the schedule has been, and then you see Leicester players dropping like flies because they played every game, then it fully makes sense. Because I would hate you have Aubameyang get injured, Saka.
Well, we saw Smith Rowe did get injured, so
yeah. But hopefully it's not too long, and also hopefully it's not too long for Barnes and Cole.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
But I just want to make the point here that what I'm seeing with Arteta now. Is in the last couple of games, I've been very critical. You guys know, and at one point I was like, get him out, pack your bags, all of that stuff. I was saying all that stuff. But we're getting to a point now where I'm noticing that regardless of who's playing, we play in the same way. So it's good in that we can make changes, but still we will have the same attacking approach, which is good. I'm going to stick my neck out. Arsenal, everyone knows that we brought in a loan signing with Odegaard in January. And we were all going to go. We've got another target, a big target in the summer. I'm going to stick my neck, put my eggs in the Odegaard basket because he is cold, man. Honestly, every time I watch him, I just think he's the answer. And it's only been a short amount of time, but I'm going to put my eggs in the Odegaard basket. He's been really good as well. But on the game, I thought, oh, wow, Willian and Pepe. Who would have thought, man? The two boneheads.
Oh my God.
Something else that we have to praise Arteta for. And I don't know if this. This might have been stuff like happening behind the scenes, but listen to this, yeah. Kolasinac and Mustafi, who both joined Schalke, have led a rebellion against the Schalke manager. Both of them have been there less than 2 months, and they're already... Well, Kolasinac has been there for 2 months, but Mustafi's only been there like a month and a bit and has already mounted a rebellion against the Schalke manager. Meanwhile,
This is why you're bottom of the league.
Ozil has gone over to Fenerbahce, and in 7 games, they've only won 2. So it's like...
And have you heard the Hertha Berlin manager called Guendouzi?
Yeah.
He said he plays like he's still... going through puberty.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is so very rude, bro.
You can see that Arteta had a lot to deal with just from those snippets there, had a lot to deal with behind the scenes. I know there's still a lot of questionable decisions like playing William, like a lot at the beginning when he should have dropped him. And we're now seeing the results of like, you dropped him. William seems to Like, his last two games, 3 assists. I'm not saying that he's back or anything like that, like some Arsenal fans were saying, but that's a big improvement from...
Oh, no, there was things Willian was doing, particularly in the second half. I was like, who's this? Yeah. Like, when did we sign this player?
When he
like,
was bursting time, through. Yeah.
No, there's one time where he took the ball and he dropped the shoulder and Castagna went flying. He bought his shimmy and then he put the ball through Tielemans' leg, which is beautiful.
Yeah,
I love that. I love that. That's the kind of content I live for. And then obviously for Pepe's goal as well,
yeah.
who did he put the ball through?
Tielemans.
Beautiful as well. But Leicester, I will give the caveat that one, Leicester have a lot of injuries as well. Fofana, Justin's injured for a while. James Maddison was injured. And now also as well.
Harvey Barnes
and Johnny.
And Vardy doesn't look like the same player. Mm. Like he just had surgery like 2 weeks ago. And then my guys, you're probably thinking that Red Bull's a miracle thing. But like he needs to take a rest, man.
When I saw the lineup, I was thinking David Luiz and Mari against Vardy. Oh my God, this is going to be ugly. But Pablo Mari marshaled him well, man. Yeah. Like there was one sprint in the second half where Mari matched him, stride, took the ball off him.
Yeah.
And Vardy was just trying to win a free kick. But to me, the man of the match for me was Xhaka. Particularly in the second half, he was outstanding. And I have to give him credit. Like in the last 12 games, he's played 90 minutes. His fitness is incredible.
Wait,
like,
just 90 minutes or he's played every game, every minute of every game?
Every minute of all of the last 12 games. So I've got to give him credit as well. So
Tanya scoffed when you said Xhaka.
And
Ndombele can't play 5 minutes.
Listen, right? I'm sorry, but what are you guys now saying then? Like, are you just taking every win with a pinch of salt and Arsenal are back? Yeah. Like, what are you guys saying?
Oh, no.
Because
wait, what? Those two are different things.
Because look,
I go with your option one.
I think Arteta's doing a good job, but the table doesn't lie. Like, I just feel like
We're 3 points behind you.
I've seen some Arsenal fans, accepting like mediocrity. Like, you're 10th. This should not be the case.
Tanya, of all people, you know that us two are not accepting mediocrity, bro.
I know, I'm not saying you too, but...
We are a mid-table side. 10th place, 11 wins, 11 draw, 11 defeats. It's obviously not good enough.
At the same time...
We're at a point now in the season where we have to go game by game, you know?
And at the same time, if you win... You can't really bash the team. You can't go, oh, no, but we're still 10th, bruv. No, like, you win.
I have plenty of friends who do that, you know. They go, oh, well, we're still 10th. We're still rubbish. I'll tell you all of this stuff. I have to be balanced, you know. When we rubbish, I will criticise the team. But when we're good, I'll give them. And that's Leicester, you know. It's not just...
Yeah, I was about to say, that's in the league, so. Still a good team. Leicester without Maddison is still a good team, obviously.
And Pepe in the first half was cooking that left back. What's his name? Luke
Arsenal are back, man. Arsenal back.
No, yeah, but you said that last time. You said that last time.
She just disables the whole argument. It just makes me not want to give them praise.
I need to hear from the most stablest person on this podcast. Mark, give us your thoughts on Leicester and Arsenal.
What, just a general... I have to give it... I can agree with Abdi. You said something about at this stage of the season, I don't care where you are in the table, it's about taking it game by game. So I think As Arsenal fans, you have every right to be happy and pleased with the performance that you saw, particularly because you had no Saka, no Aubameyang. Mm. But for me anyway, is the key one was no Saka, first of all. And the fact that I'm saying that about a 19-year-old boy is firstly crazy and secondly testament to how good he is. But yeah, I think you have every right to be happy. At the end of the day, it's a performance that would have and should have filled you with a lot of hope. And it's performances where you can take apart a team who are also really good that make you think, okay, maybe we're starting to, as Abdi said, the football looks similar every week. Patterns of play are evolving. It looks like Arsenal, I don't know what's going to happen this season, but if you can keep up that momentum, who knows about next season? And I'm obviously not talking about league titles and stuff. But
of course.
For Arsenal fans now, I think next season is big for Arsenal. Let me just say that. It can't be another 8th to 10th place stroll type season.
Yeah.
In that sense, I think it's massive for you. Like, it's top 4 minimum next season. Or the reality is that you can't really hold Arsenal in that echelon of teams that you would in terms of today, right now. I'm not talking about historical, because if you're talking in that sense, you're up there with the Liverpools and the Uniteds. But this day and age, you can't afford another 8th, 7th, 10th place season next season.
I agree.
But there's a lot to be positive about. That's my view. from the outside looking in.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that. I feel a little bit
just
better.
Just quickly talk about the BT Sport pundits, man.
Wait, just before we do that, well, actually, go and do that, and then I'll go on to my next point.
Martin Keown must be the worst co-commentator I've ever heard.
Oh, I like Martin Keown.
He literally says nothing.
I don't like him.
He would have, honestly, if he had the chance here, he would have run onto the pitch and given Emile Smith Rowe a hug. The way he talks about him like he's his son, like he makes my admiration for Saka look like I hate him with the way he talks about Smith Rowe, bruv.
I will agree with one thing. The way he was like saying like, oh, William doesn't look up to it, and then William gets the two assists, he's like, oh, William's back. William has been
And his punditry, like, I feel like he just says words. There's like no meaning to anything he says. Like, you don't learn anything, you don't know anything new. He just goes, well, and that's the beauty of Arsenal. It's almost like the team of old. Oh, and that's what we want to see. I'm like, shut up, man. Like, you're actually boring me, right? Like, every time I listen to you.
Anyway.
And having Robbie Savage as your in the studio pundit is legitimately does not do anything for the reputation of BT Sport, because you've literally got a joke, man, there. It's a joke.
All right. Let's bring order. Contrasting results in Europe for both Leicester and Arsenal. Arsenal came mightily close to exiting the Europa League, but beat Benfica 3-2. And Leicester crashed out against Slavia Prague. Just to add some context.
That guy who scored the second goal for Slavia Prague, is he highly rated? I've never, because I heard they were talking about him.
Commentator said it when he scored. Yeah.
I'd never heard of him before, though.
Looks like it. And it was it was a clean strike. One thing I will say is actually that Leicester's Brendan Rodgers' team selection really confused me. At 0-0, going into the second leg where it's win the game or go out. Yeah. For me, that really wasn't the time to rest players. I know, obviously, you had Arsenal coming up. But Arsenal
both
strong in the Europa League. And it paid off. Leicester didn't. And they got what they got. For me, Harvey Barnes should have started, definitely. Yeah. And if you're gonna rest one of those players for the Arsenal game, you would have rested Jamie Vardy, in my opinion.
Yeah. He was very quiet in the Slavia Prague game as well.
Exactly. Listen, we're talking about, how old is he? 30. We're talking about a 35-year-old Jamie Vardy. He can't play 90 minutes on a Thursday and put in a performance for 90 minutes on a Sunday.
Straight after having groin surgery. My guy had 2 weeks ago had groin surgery and he's back. This is mental.
No.
This is crazy.
I'm not going to say too much here, but honestly, that needs to be looked into, because in the year they won the league, he had groin surgery and missed 1 week.
That's
like,
crazy.
How's that possible?
Wow.
And also, you're 34 years old. Cut off with the Red Bull, bruv. Your heart can't take it. You got to change up your diet, bro. And also, it's impressive that he's still that quick at 34. But if you want to stay longer, bro, just change the water. Look at Milner, bro.
Jamie Vardy wakes up with like Red Bull and cigarettes in his hand. Anyway, let's move on. Tanya, happy Tanya. Tanya, smiling. Sun's out. Spurs win. Bell's back. You said it on Twitter.
Yeah,
you said run it back. Bell's
back. Run it back. Yeah, no, it was a good performance. I was really surprised by Burnley, because you know they're going to have every single player behind that ball and make it very, very difficult. Mm. But they were very open defensively, I felt. It was a stroll in the park for us, to be quite honest with you. I felt we were really comfortable, and we started off really confidently, aggressive, got an early goal from Bale, taking up a striker position. I was like, come on, Gary. Honestly, look, I'm going to take everything he does with a pinch of salt, because he hasn't been great this season. But, you know, he is starting to show that he's growing into the game, and maybe he just needed the minutes under his belt, you know? I know that when he has been given opportunities, he's looked sluggish and whatnot, but I personally don't think Jose was giving him enough opportunities to prove himself. And he got, obviously, two goals, one assist, man of the match. It's great to see. It takes the pressure off Son and Kane. Mm-hmm. And it gives opponents another thing to worry about. It's not Kane and Son now. It's Gareth Bale added to that. And To be fair, he did show a little bit of pace in that game. I can't lie. And I thought that that part of his game was well and truly gone.
First time in about 4 years.
I know, first time in about 4 years.
Can I just say...
Literally has a run in 4 years.
Just quickly, I think that was such a fair assessment, Tanda.
Thank you, Mark.
Just being really like real about his struggles early on in the season. But in all honesty, I'm starting to see not the Gareth Bale, but just smaller glimpses where it's kind of like, look, you give him that space on the right side and you let him check in, more often than not, he's going to bend it around the centre-back and the keeper with his left foot and find the net. He started to do that. A prime example, I think, was his second against Burnley, where he was in space on the right, picked it up, left foot. If you're going to let him use the left foot, he will punish you. Yeah. I thought that was a really fair assessment. But I said last week, I think it was last week, that obviously the Euros are in the summer, and I honestly think that that thought in his head is one of the driving reasons behind his upturn in form. You'd want to be going into that champ, and it's not a slight on Spurs. I think every player going to the Euros will be thinking that, but particularly the ones who haven't been in form for the season. Like I said last week, if there is a time to find your form and kick on before the Euros, it's right now at the business end of the season. If Spurs have that Gareth Bale, then it's only good for Spurs, isn't it?
And I think go on, Junior.
No, I was just going to ask you, similar question that you asked me and Abdi. Obviously, on the back of 2-4-0 wins, because you won in Europa as well by 4-0, although you were pretty much through.
Yeah.
But you win 4-0, Gareth Bale and Ali score, and then you win 4-0 against Burnley, Bale scores twice. And also gets an assist. That ball to Kane was so sick. But, like, are Spurs back? Are you happy? What is your assessment there? Like, that's what I want to know.
I mean, if you're asking other Tottenham fans, they probably say, yeah, we're back. But I'm not delusional. Like, I'm not going to just forget about the bad results that we've had. You know, you have to take into account... Can you let me finish, please? You have to take account that we played a team of burgers like Wolfsburger, and we played a very, very poor Burnley side. So I'm not going to get too carried away. Of course, it's great. We're scoring goals. We look like we're growing in confidence. But look, the worry will always be our defence. I will have to say that Sanchez had a decent game. Maybe he needs to just stick with Toby and Sanchez now and just let that be the centre-back partnership, because I do think swapping and changing it probably isn't helping things. And I think Reguilon, he has been such a massive miss for us. On that left-hand side, his pace and even his defensive work at times, I think we've missed it a lot. You know, we've had bloody Ben Davis. Like, you couldn't get any two opposites of each other. Like, you get the old granddad in Ben Davis and you've got, like, the young, like, quick Reguilon. Like, I've missed that guy so much. But look, yeah, we're in a good place right now, but I'm not getting ahead of myself. I have to see a run of games now. I have to see us win our next, say, 4 games for me to be like, okay, Jose Mourinho is bringing it back. Then I'll say we're back. But Bale's back, I don't care.
in like 2 or 3 games, it's the North London derby.
I'm not confident about that, you know. I'll be honest.
You had to ruin the podcast, didn't you, Daniel?
Daniel, I'm not confident. Why are you calling me Daniel?
Can I just say, I can't wait. Daniel, yes, Daniel. I can't wait. I got to put it out there now. I don't care who wins. I can't wait for the episode that we record after that derby. Just got to put it out there.
I don't know.
And I'm just going to put it out there that I'm only coming if we win, yeah?
And I'll say it now, yeah. I know earlier in the season when Spurs beat Arsenal, I didn't speak. I promise that regardless of the result, I will speak on the podcast.
Oh, no, God.
But that was, to be fair, I guess the Spurs game must have hit you hard, but that was, you were just in the worst run of form possible. And I think you had just given up.
Like, literally, because I had defended Arsenal, well, sort of defended Arsenal throughout the whole period. I was like, no, the players, Arteta's okay. And then I watched that North London derby and I just wanted to kill someone. And I was just like, yeah, I can't talk because I will literally.
The thing with that game is that you've got your Europa, you've got to travel and we're at home.
Yeah.
Which I was like, okay. And also, I think the only thing that gives me a bit of confidence is that we are starting to pick up a bit of form. I think if that game had come in our bad run, boy, it would have been long for us. But I still think, do you know what? I could see that being a draw. I really do. I think Arsenal ain't the same Arsenal that we beat 2-0, and we're not the same Spurs. So, boy, that's going to be a tricky one.
I just want to echo what Tanya was saying about Bale. Mm. Although, like, it was Burnley who, you know, they lost 5-0 their last season. They haven't got a good record away. Exactly, Brexit FC. And also, you did beat Burger King in the last game as well.
Burger King 11.
But I agree. I do agree that I'm not saying he's all the way back, but Bale is he's starting to look tasty. I mean, you don't become a bad footballer overnight. But certain things he was doing in the Burnley game, I was just like, okay, I'm scared now. And one thing I will say is, the only thing that can stop this resurgence of Bale is what Mourinho will probably do is put him straight back on the bench next game.
Yeah.
If he continues with him starting and him getting back into the groove of things with Son and Kane, then Tottenham will start getting more points, and I can guarantee that.
And you've got to add Dele into that as well.
Hopefully, to be fair, I don't know if he's going to start Dele, because that if you have them as a front four, and plus Ndombele deeper with Højbjerg, that's not enough protection for someone like Jose Mourinho.
Yeah,
but can I just quickly say, just to counter that, you're talking about a player who notoriously just can't string a run of games together without picking up nibbles. So there's also the aspect of managing those minutes, I guess, and playing him for 30 one game and then giving him 90 the next, and maybe resting him for the Europa League games and playing him for the full game in the league. However he manages it is going to be interesting, but yeah. Bell looks like, as Abdi said, not the Gareth Bell, but
a version of
his old self.
Well said, indeed. Mark. On spotlight on you. All of our teams won. So happy pod. No more support group. We are living the best life. Mark, talk us through the Sheffield United win.
Good stuff. Firstly, it's crazy to think that I was nervous going into a game against a team who have picked up 11 points in 25 games this season. That's where we were at before that game. I was genuinely nervous. I thought there would be a chance that we could draw, lose, but we won. I said last week I really wanted to see, it didn't even have to be personnel change, but something change. And that definitely happened. So the system was different. Mm-hmm. Although it may have looked like a 4-3-3, it was just not that. When you looked at us in game and you look at our average position mats, Andy Robertson was basically playing as a left winger, and Trent was almost in that kind of, right centre back / right centre mid / right back role. And then you had that, then meant Mane could move in from the left and kind of occupy that central space. It was really good.
It was good to see,
and it. It's something I've been screaming for a couple of weeks now. It's something different. Keep the opponents guessing. And that's what we've got. So I'm actually really happy. Obviously, the clean sheet came. I thought Thiago was good. And we've only got Jota and Fabinho and a few others to add to this now for our Champions League campaign. We've got those players coming back. So I'm not saying everything's changed, because it quite clearly hasn't. But it's a positive that I've been able to pluck out of a whole string of negatives. But for me now, it's about, we've got Chelsea on Thursday, and the win against Sheffield United for me doesn't mean anything unless we go and pick up 3 points against Chelsea.
I'm a Liverpool fan, to be fair.
So, yeah, just to sum up my thoughts, a lot more positive. I saw patterns of play in there that I haven't seen for a while. I saw a bit more confidence in the players. I saw a group of players who really wanted to win that game. But it has to continue now. We have to build into some sort of momentum. And as Tanya said actually earlier, I won't be majorly happy until I see us spin 3 or 4 wins on the bounce in the league.
I think that's all good for start. Us.
Yeah, literally.
A quick caveat to the clean sheet thing was obviously that Adrian played because Alisson's father passed away. So just want to rest in peace. Alisson's father.
Firmino dedicated his goal to him, didn't he?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I saw the Curtis Jones.
Yeah, Curtis did as well.
Yeah.
Outside of the pitch. And I mean, it's horrible news, the Alisson's dad, especially the drowning, and it just not being a really nice situation. He actually only went there because the city he was originally in was spiking with COVID cases. So he thought, cool, I'm going to get out of here and go to a holiday home somewhere else in Brazil. You know more about this than me, Junior, due to the size of the country and where everything is.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not a nice situation. But I have to give props. This might actually be the first time I've ever done this, and potentially the first time I ever will. But I thought Adrian was good.
Yeah.
Wow.
I thought that's all I can say. I'm not going to big him up and say I thought he was unbelievable, but he gave us the steady performance that we really needed. At the end of the day, he's playing behind the back two of 20-year-old Ozan Kabak, playing his third Premier League game, and 23-year-old Nat Phillips, who is playing what maybe his sixth or seventh Premier League game. So he was behind an inexperienced back two.
That's fair.
And really offered us some stability, and I thought he was good with the ball at his feet. He was composed, and we don't usually see that from Adrian. So I do have to point that out. And no doubt, if he does end up playing for us again, we won't see that. But it was good to see against Sheffield United.
If Kelleher's fit, he's going straight back to the bench.
Is everything okay with Nat Phillips? Man shaved his head. He's looking very
No, I like crazy. That, man. It makes him look more militant.
It makes him look 10 years older.
We need it. Listen, the defensive crisis we've gone through this season. Listen, if Nat Phillips has to shave his head, I don't know, then just do it. Just do it.
All right, cool.
Just on that note, on the Nat Phillips note, I thought he was great. He would actually be, for me, the first centre-back on the team sheet for us going into the end of this season. And I would keep him as our fourth-choice centre-back next season, 100%. I'm a fan of Nat Phillips. And it's funny because we were very close to loaning him off to the Championship in the summer. So it's lucky that he didn't, actually.
But it's funny because I think you got six centre-backs now, including those that are injured. So...
two of those are loan, innit? So
yeah, and Reece Williams shouldn't have counted it. Like, no one would know who he was.
Wait.
If it weren't for the injury crisis.
Kabak and is Davies you actually bought him?
Yeah, Davies was bought.
See, the problem with that is that obviously, as is our luck this season, he's injured at the moment. he wasn't injured when he came in. Hopefully he's back in the next couple of weeks, but he hasn't even been able to make his debut yet.
Yeah,
you're right. Celtic were very close to buying him, and turns out we managed to pip him last minute because obviously we desperately needed legs that position. The last thing from me on that game is just a bit of praise for Curtis Jones. He was the one for me that set our tempo, him, Gini and Thiago in particular, but he was the ball getter, not afraid to be on the ball, not afraid to try something different and not afraid to be creative. And he got his goal, which was great. And he played a big hand in the second goal as well.
That's fair. Does anyone have any pressing thing on this game? Because we can move on, because we still have so much to get.
Ramsdale made some good saves.
But that's it.
There was one he made from Firmino that was a bit lucky, but it was a good hand. But there was one, I think it was from Trent, I'm not sure.
On the top corner. Yeah.
That was a good save.
And also low down to Salah when Salah was through as well. But yeah. They're going straight down, so yeah, good luck to that.
Yeah, bye.
The final game was Everton versus Southampton. Southampton are in a ridiculous run of form. They're just
14 games, 7 points, 7 goals.
Wow.
It's the side. We gave Hasenhüttl manager of the season.
Exactly.
So far. Halfway award.
So far.
Yeah.
Do you know what?
I was saying D. Smith here, so.
Shut up.
Whatever.
Right, it goes to show that the points that you pick up, because you know when you lose a game early on in the season, you kind of think, it's early on in the season, it's annoying, but it actually just goes to show how important those points are, because if Southampton didn't have a strong start to the season, they'd be in serious trouble right now.
They'd be in that scrap that we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Only 7 points from Fulham, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, if they're not now. But major credit to Everton. They keep going. Richarlison is finally scoring goals, because I was at a point, where I was thinking...
Man said fight. He's got like 6 this season.
Yeah, but they're all in like 6 or 7 games, right?
Sorry, dude. Yeah.
Man said 6 to me with his chest, like I was about to be blown away.
Yeah, I know. I was disproving your point. I don't know.
No, listen, he went through a large gap where he wasn't scoring. So I was just like, this guy, like, you can't... He came with a big like, people forget that Leicester spent 50 million on Richarlison.
Well, yeah, I think people do forget because Leicester didn't spend a penny on him. It was Everton.
Yeah.
Everton, yeah, whatever, man. He's too quick. Anyway, Everton spent 50 million on Richarlison. And for 6 goals this season, like, you expect more. But he is, you know, he had a good game against Spurs in the FA Cup. And he scored the winner yesterday. But
yeah. No, I was just saying.
Abdi put goals galore, like, relax.
He's been scoring a lot lately.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's his back.
So it's Abdi that I really... Yeah. So I'm firing fire. Goals galore
you
for...
You need to stop your Everton hate, bro.
I was just going to say that he's the type of player that, yes, you would expect more goals, but he does influence football games in a whole other side of things other than goals. So, to be fair, like, I'm being a bit harsh, but I really find his new tongue out celebration, it really, really irks me. So,
I just think, like, if you, because the whole season they've been playing like a version of 4-4-2. A version. I'm not saying they're playing 4-4-2, but you see, like, Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison up top together, and they were relying on a lot on Calvert-Lewin's goals. Yeah, when he got injured, Richarlison wasn't scoring. They were getting goals from other areas. So that's what I'm saying. Like, for a £50 million player, you expect more up front and product. Yeah, he does influence games, but if you influence games and it's still 1-1 and you didn't bag, it's not going to do you any good.
I've got a question for the three of you. Let's say I want a one word answer. Some of you might want to elaborate. Everton top Abdi. Four, yes or no?
Absolutely yes. Not. No way.
Yes.
You think so? Really?
I think. What's dark horse? I think they're a dark horse.
Oh, but when I said it, it was meant.
No, you said they were going to win the league.
You can't spin words that are on record, Daniel.
I want this on record. You've got to find it for me because I'm sure I would be stupid enough.
I've showed you this before. Anyway, what was I saying? Yeah.
It's still got Alex Iwobi in the starting 11.
No, but I just think, like, the manager and the form that they're on, they're just... I don't know.
Let's not forget. That before this game, their last two home games were 2-0 defeat to Fulham, 2-0 defeat to Newcastle.
Exactly. So,
okay, fair. But all That's teams true. Go through.
That's true. They've got a game in hand, though, equally, just to even that out. And I think if they win that, they are. I think they leapfrog Liverpool, they leapfrog us, and B, I'm not sure how many points it puts
They'll
them.
Be level with West Ham, yeah.
Behind top four, yeah. So the reason I asked that is because as much as I don't like it, I really think there's a chance.
Because I see Leicester dropping out of the... And out of Everton and West Ham, I'm more likely to believe that Everton could finish above West Ham in the Champions League spots, if that were to happen.
I just don't think they're better than your Liverpools and your Chelsea's for me. I just don't think that.
Well, Liverpool and Chelsea have to win games in order to be able to get into the top
Chelsea
four.
Chelsea are beating under Tuchel, man.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're not winning. That's three or four draws with Tuchel. So come at me again.
They did beat Tottenham. They beat
one game.
United.
That's two games.
They won a home game. I can't remember who, but they've won three games since he's been there. So,
but
and
there's three or four draws there.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but they did. They had an impressive. I know it's not the league, but they did go to the La Liga. League leaders and beat them. So Chelsea are looking.
But we're talking about the league, and we're talking about finishing top four.
Yeah,
so
but
I'm saying
he's only been there for five or six
games.
Yeah,
he hasn't been there long enough.
Oh my dear, I'm not saying that
I know
it's a disaster.
I know you're ruling Chelsea out already.
I'm not ruling Chelsea out. I'm just saying Chelsea and Liverpool have to win. Andy hates Chelsea more than me.
So what you're saying, Junior? It's going to be Junior saying it's going to be Man City, Man United, Tottenham, and Arsenal.
No, what I'm saying is...
You're rolling out everyone, bro.
It's Man City, West Ham, Everton and Aston Villa, top four. I said it first.
Wow. Everton and Aston Villa, wow.
And West Ham. Anyway, let's move on. So that ends the... We haven't got long left, basically. Neymar, I don't know if it was Sunday, he was doing some madness on his Instagram. So he basically said, "Send me a secret, I won't bait you out." So I don't know any of these people, but I have some here that are completely.
Are they like PG? Yeah, PG.
No.
Can I say one thing as well, just before we read this out?
Oh, yeah.
So I can, just to make it a bit easier for you. So one of the ones that Junior is about to read out is one that he sent in for Neymar.
No.
And we want you guys, we want you guys to let us know on socials which one you think that
is. Yeah, we'll do a poll.
Do you know what annoys me?
Portuguese.
Do you know why this annoys me? Because Mark says everything with such a straight face.
Yeah, he does. That was straight face. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Junior, read it. Can I just say, the second he put out that Instagram post, PSG should have been on the phone and said, bro, you better get back to training right now. What is this jobless behaviour, man?
I just want to start this segment by saying I did not submit any secrets to Neymar.
I'm joking.
Okay, so I'm just gonna start. Thanks, Mark.
Sorry now.
So he goes
red.
Blushing. Oh,
so he goes, I went to link a girl at her house. I woke up there, and then I ended up linking her mum.
Wow.
Oh my god.
Wow.
Hi guys, thank you for joining us on episode 76.
The next one. I have children, but my wife doesn't know about it. We've been dating for 2 years.
No.
Him and his mistress. The next one.
Men are liars.
I've slept with my cousin at my house.
Wait, stop there. That's enough.
No, wait, listen. At my house when my parents and her parents were there.
Wait, what? Why are these people treating Neymar like he's Jeremy Carl? Coming with some mad.
This one, I think someone.
He said, I won't bait you out. He should have just put their handles in responses.
This one, look, I'm not going to bait no one out, but one person on this podcast can relate to this. Listen, I went to fart on the bus going to uni and I ended up taking a dump in my trousers.
I
had to go to uni in that way, in that state.
Oh my!
The next one,
bro.
When me and my partner, boyfriend, whatever, completed 5 years of dating, I went to send him a sensual photo.
I know where this is going.
But I ended up sending it to his mum. I went to ask a girl if she would go out with me, but I was so nervous that I ended up farting in front of her.
Excuse me?
And then the last one, just to end it, because I kissed my girlfriend's mum, but now she wants more.
Wow. These are actually kidding me.
The tone of this podcast was quite low at the start, and after that, now it's just hit rock bottom. That's what I'm saying.
We can thank Neymar for that.
Neymar, I know. Let me just a little note to Neymar. Yeah, I know every season you have to take a couple months off for your sister's birthday. But bruv, I you know, we always used to have these debates about Neymar before, and I always used to say, man, go have fun, enjoy your life and everything. But bro, get back to training and get back onto the football field, because clearly you're not doing anything wrong.
Okay, moving on to more serious things. I've got here a list of five asides from different clubs that are made up of under 23 players that play for that club. And I just want to see from you guys which. I'll pin them against each other and you tell me who wins in your opinion. So we'll start with Dortmund versus Barcelona. The Dortmund team is Jude Bellingham, Erling Haaland, Giovanni Reyna, Youssoufa Moukoko, and Jadon Sancho versus Barcelona, Sergino Dest, Riqui, never pronounce this guy's name. Is it
Puig?
Puig, yeah. Francisco Trincao, Ansu Fati, and Pedri.
I go with Dortmund.
Dortmund win all day, mate.
100%.
Dortmund win all day, yeah.
Then I've got
Haaland's the type of guy, yeah, who he'll take five aside so seriously, he'll count all of his goals. He will ask for 17 goals this off.
No, you should. Anyway, if you play five aside, you should take it seriously and count all your goals. Then next we've got Chelsea. What did he say?
I'm just a pastor. Sorry.
The next one. Well, I bet you count your assists. Come on.
Yeah, of course, man. Come on. No, I count my pass completed.
All right. The next one is Chelsea versus Man City. We've got Christian Pulisic, Mason Mount, Reece James, Callum Hudson-Odoi, and Kai Havertz. Ooh. Versus Gabriel Jesus, Ferran Torres, Phil Foden, Ruben Diaz, and Eric Garcia.
Ooh. Two centre backs.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about.
I'm giving that one to Chelsea.
Yeah, same. I'm giving
that one to Chelsea.
For the attacking.
You just know that someone like Hudson-Odoi would have a field day on the five-a-side pitch.
Yeah.
But Ruben Diaz, though.
Yeah.
The next one is Arsenal versus Man United. We got Gabriel, Bukayo Saka. I know what Abdi's going to say. Gabriel Martinelli, Kieran Tierney, Smith Rowe. Versus Mason Greenwood, Ahmad Traore, Wan-Bissaka, Brandon Williams, and Marcus
Arsenal,
Rashford.
Arsenal, all the way. Not even a
sorry,
delay,
yeah, first of
I
all.
Why you should have stopped asking Bukayo Saka because that was my answer.
Why did they put in Ahmad We've not seen him on the picture.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
I want to just say that I did not create this list. So, so yeah, who are we going with?
Arsenal.
Abdi said Saka.
Saka. That's my answer.
next up is Juventus versus Liverpool. We've got, for Juventus, we've got Kulusevski. I can't pronounce his name. Bentancur, Chiesa, De Ligt, and McKennie. And for Liverpool, we've got Harvey Elliott, Curtis Jones. I don't know why they put Nathaniel Phillips. I don't know if you agree, Mark, but Nathaniel Phillips, Trent Alexander-Arnold, and Joe Gomez.
These
selections are really bad.
Yeah, I know. Who would you... Okay, Mark, replace Nat Phillips with someone under 23 from Liverpool.
On the spot.
You're
a bit mad there.
We only do on the spot here.
I couldn't even think. I can't even think.
Are we going Liverpool or Juventus?
I'll go Liverpool.
You have to go Liverpool.
Yeah.
Those Juventus players look a bit dusty, to be honest.
The next one and last one is Real Madrid versus AC Milan. Because Martin Odegaard is on loan from Real Madrid, they've put him in the Real Madrid.
Doesn't count. He's
Martin
asked.
Odegaard.
Nah,
he's
yeah,
asked.
Martin.
Okay, Martin Odegaard, Valverde, Rodrigo, Eder Militao, and Vinicius Jr. against Daniel Maldini, the son of...
Slow down. Say them names again.
What,
the Brazilian ones?
Yeah.
Eder Militao.
Eder Militao.
Vinicius Jr.
And Vinicius Jr. So, son of Pablo Maldini is here. Daniel Maldini, Theo Hernandez. How do you pronounce this guy's name? Jens Peter... however you say his name.
Pronounce it in Portuguese, mate.
No, bro, I don't know.
When he's Norwegian.
Holger.
Holger,
there you go. See, all I needed was some instruction, Abdi. Alexis Salamakers, or how you say it, and Rafael Leão.
I ain't got a Scooby, so I'm just going to go for Real Madrid.
And that ended that segment.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks, Gigi.
Can we just quickly talk about AC Milan and... that idiotic, loudmouth, ponytail twat up front. Every time he speaks nowadays, I just think, what a clown, bruv. You're 40 years old, yeah? And your hair's like that, and you call yourself a lion. People should stop taking him seriously.
And he speaks about himself in third person.
I know, exactly. You talk about yourself in the third person, I can't take you seriously. But the point Abdi is making, I'm just joking. He said that LeBron just focus on football. And essentially, like, you know, that thing that reporter said once, shut up and dribble, about LeBron. You know, if you're taking a stand against what's wrong, it's hardly political. And at the end of the day, you can't get away from politics and football. Sometimes they have to be interlinked. So to tell someone to just stick to what you're good at it will, and any time Ibrahimovic talks about anything other than football from now on, then people should just say stick to what you're good at.
And he's up,
and you're 40, so soon you won't be 40. You're soon you won't be good at football anymore, so you won't be able to talk about anything.
He's acting like LeBron would not step on his face, literally. Like, I don't know who he thinks he is. I don't know.
But also, Lukaku,
also I think it's really bad because there's been a lot of racism in football and players are finally speaking out about it. And it's becoming
Ibrahimovic himself has spoken about the fact that he's got a typically Bosnian surname. And he said he's been victim of racism in Sweden. So you're not allowed to talk about that in your own words. So, oh man, I'm done with this guy.
Okay, cool. Let's do Man of the Week to wrap up.
Mark's got a question.
Sorry, just quickly. It's like a small, it's a very small trivia thing that I saw earlier. And actually, you mentioned Vinicius. Sorry, I'm doing this in such a English pronunciation, but Vinicius Jr. just recently became the third youngest player to reach 100 caps for Real Madrid. I want to know if you guys know who the two players who have reached 100 caps for Madrid are that were younger than Vinicius.
Raul?
No idea.
Correct.
And Guti?
No. Ooh. But think about a player that could come into a team and play constantly. What type of position are we talking?
Fullback. Marcelo? Goalkeeper, Casillas.
Yeah.
Correct. Hey, well done, Junior.
And Casillas. That was good from you, Abdi.
Yeah.
I thought you would have been in like a snap, but Junior got them both. I just thought that was interesting.
What can I do? Man said it the second the question died in your mouth. He was there. What can I say?
That's usually you. That's usually you.
But let me just tell you. So Vinicius Junior did it at 20 years and 232 days. Casillas did it at 20 years and 125 days. And I think this is mad. Raul made his 100th appearance for Real Madrid at 19 years and 177 days old.
Raul was different, man.
Crazy.
Cool. So let's do Man of the Week, and I'll start because Abdi usually takes mine. So I'm gonna go with Willian because although we give him a lot of stick, I know we give him a lot of stick, and we even voted him worst player transfer wise. But you have to give credit where it's due. 3 assists in a week. Regardless if you're the worst player that's ever played football, according to Abdi. You deserve some credit, so I'm gonna go with Willian. Let's go with Tanya next.
Yay!
Let's go with Tanya next. She was looking at me with such expectations. So, come on, Tanya.
I think it's no surprise. It has to be Gareth Bale. 4 goals.
No
way. 4 games and 3 assists. It's got to be Gareth Bale for me.
Yeah, that's a solid shout, Marcus.
I'm going to give it to Curtis Jones this week. Yep, I thought he was really influential on the pitch. A goal. An assist, not a technical assist because it was an own goal, the second goal, but the assist was there. Asked to play a slightly different role, play more advanced, and I thought he'd done that really well. So Curtis Jones for me.
Fair. And then the enigma.
You've got to stop saying that. Just a man. I was going to go for Lukaku because recently what he's been doing for international.
He's been slapping it to be fair.
And slapping goals into a bottom corner, running for everyone, which is he's been on fire. And he doubled Ibrahimovic 2 weeks ago. But in the last second, I have to give it to Saka, the main man.
Oh, like, for goodness.
The king of Arsenal. He saved our. He didn't play the weekend, but he saved our season midweek.
Yeah,
I suppose. Yeah,
astounding assists. So
that's true. To be fair,
it's so funny. As soon as our teams win, Man of the Week is dominated by our team.
I know. Oh,
I had to change
God.
It because everyone
so
went for their own team.
Oh well. If you don't like it, get your own podcast. On that note, see you later.
No, I have one story. I left the story off last week. We had footballers in trouble with the law, and I left the story off, and I have to tell this story. It's just crazy. So I was listening to a podcast, and there was a story about you guys. I don't know if you remember. There was a manager who was in the Football League. He's the current sporting director of Peterborough. His name is Barry Fry, and Barry Fry was like, basically, he's just talking about how he had some crazy owners in his time as a manager. So when he was at Barnet, he had a crazy owner. When he was at Birmingham and Peterborough, and one of his owners, I think it was at Barnet, there's a guy called Keith Cheeseman. And what he did is that he was having all of their players were having difficulties with being paid. paid because he was just a dodgy owner. And then what he did was, this is mad. So he said, I'm going to throw a party for the players because they've been amazing. So he said, get every player to bring at least three people they know. And he said, give me all of their names and their addresses so I can send out invites for the party. So he got all of their names and the addresses, and this must have come up to like 200, 300 people, yeah? And he went and took out 10,000 loans on every single name he had. And then he got arrested. He finally got caught for embezzling $750,000.
Oh, my God.
And that's how he ended up paying the players 5 week wages. But it was only came from all of the loans he took out in all of the their family members and friends.
That is mad.
Wait, didn't a bank send a letter to these people?
No, mate, this was back in the day where you could just take out a loan by taking a name and an address.
I was just about to ask you, not to put you on the spot, but when are we looking at? What sort of time frame?
This is like, I think it was like late 90s, early 2000s, so the regulations were way different than it is.
That's mad.
Bruh, that's crazy. Addy, do your little thing.
Oh, thank you guys for joining us on this 76. We'll talk about that later. And as always, whatever, man. End this rubbish.
See you later.
Peace out.
It's Junior, man. He always fluffs me. Sports Social Podcast Network.